Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Audible, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Audible, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention. For the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas, this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket today. In the order of their appearance, they are 08-1056, TGS NOPEC Geophysical Company versus Susan Combs from the Travis County and the 3rd Court of Appeals District. The second matter, cause number 090330, Liana Ladornu versus American Protection Insurance Company from Travis County and the 3rd Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes to each side for these arguments. We will take a brief recess between arguments. These proceedings are being recorded, and a transmission of the recording will be available on the court's website by the end of the day. The Chief Justice is not available today, but he will be sitting in both causes. Justice Guzman will not be sitting in the first cause, nor will Justice Phillips. I mean, Justice Heck, sorry. The court's ready to hear oral argument in 08-1056, TGS NOPEC versus Susan Combs.
May it please the court, Mr. McBride will present argument for the petitioner. Mr. Phillips will present argument for the amicus. Petitioners reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. McBride will present the first 5 minutes and will present the rebuttal.
May it please this honorable court. The issue before this court is whether Texas law sources TGS's receipts from conveying seismic data to its customers to the place where the data is used or to the location of payor. The statute at issue here are sections 171.103 and 171.1032 of the tax code, which is tab 1 in your bench book. For a number of years, the comptroller agreed with TGS that the transfer of seismic data pursuant to a license agreement was properly sourced to the location of payor under the catch-all provision subsection 6 as other business done in this state. In 2002, the comptroller changed her mind and claimed that as of 1997, the applicable provision in subsection 4, which sources to Texas receipts from the use of a patent, copyright, trademark, franchise, or license in this state. The Court of Appeals agreed and concluded that because TGS uses a license to convey seismic data to its customers, TGS's receipts must come from the use of a license and should be sourced to the place where the license is used.
How does the comptroller treat receipts from the licensing of software?
To the location of payor, just like we used to be treated.
And that's not in the statute.
No, it's not mentioned
in the statute. So doesn't the mention of license then indicate that it's different from licensing of software?
Yes. We characterize a license as an asset. It's a thing. It's something like a FCC license that you license somebody else to broadcast bandwidth. That's how we characterize. That's how the statute reads. It's pretty simple.
Isn't a copyright though an intangible as well?
Yes, it is. And you license copyrights, and so if I own a copyright and I license that copyright to somebody else, and that person pays me money for the use of that copyright, then I receive receipts from the use of that intangible asset. In our case, we have data, seismic data, which is not listed in the 5 intangible assets.
I find it ironic that we're listening to this tax case on tax day.
I do too, Your Honor.
And on my mother's birthday. But is there an issue as to perhaps the discretion that the comptroller has in making this decision?
Well, the comptroller does have some discretion, but we do, in some cases, defer to the comptroller's interpretation. But if we look at their interpretation, it has to be reasonable, and it can't conflict with the plain meaning of the statute. And we contend that her rationale is unreasonable. She actually has interpreted the statute with a rule, and the rule says that the owner of a patent, copyright, trademark, franchise, or license should be taxed if somebody else uses that license somewhere else. We are not an owner of a license. We're not an owner of any of those assets. We own data, and we license that by a method of conveyance of license, and they're confusing the two.
Do you think perhaps the controller's interest in trying to maximize the tax base for the state of Texas has anything to do with this?
I do.
And whether or not that goes into perhaps her discretion in making this decision?
It does.
So So you could just call yours a lease instead of a license.
Sure. It's been known as a license for many, many years, and the industry likes the term. It's a standard contract. It gets modified over time, but it takes a lot to get those leases or those licenses modified.
So why do you call it a license?
Because of the industry.
Why did you before call it a license, at least?
We've talked with the industry about that, about trying, because it really is just an agreement. But it's a limited agreement. We give them the right to use data. They can use it anywhere they want to.
Any place they want to.
They just can't transfer it to somebody else.
So how are your customers different than the licensees of a patent?
Well, our customers use data. The licensees of a patent use patents, and that is listed in the statute. If data was listed in the statute, we wouldn't be here. If it said other intangible assets like other states do, we would not be here on that issue.
But it's a little bit confusing because you can patent a process.
Sure.
And this is almost like licensing a process.
Well, it's licensing information. It's just information. It's just data. It's just what is under the ground.
Well, but, I mean, what a patent produces is a tangible item. You gather data, and so therefore you're patenting. It's like a patent of a process or a data-gathering mechanism, isn't it?
Not really. You've got to look at it from the taxpayer standpoint, and the taxpayer has data, just like the taxpayer has a patent, and the asset is the actual patent, which has everything underlying the patent, the process, everything like that. Just as much as a franchise does, a franchise has a bunch of intangible rights. It's actually an asset in and of itself, and it's licensed to somebody else to use that franchise.
Counsel, as I understand it, your view is that under 171.103.4, the license used there is not the licensing process that you're using. Example of a license that is included under subsection 4. There's
FCC,
several examples.
FCC license, airport gate license, a sub-license of a patent, copyright, or trademark. That would be sourced under the statute.
And a clear, concise distinction in what at first glance seems like a somewhat metaphysical difference. What's your clear, concise distinction between the licenses you just gave an example of are under subsection 4 and yours? What's the rule you would draw?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
A clear test to distinguish the two.
What does the taxpayer own? If the taxpayer owns one of those five assets, then it's taxed, and they receive income from the use of one of those assets, then they get taxed on that. And my time is up, so I'll be happy to finished answering your line of questioning.
I think you've answered that particular question. Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from you next.
Thank you.
May it please this honorable court, my client, Western GECO, is like TGS NOPEC, an owner of seismic data, which it licenses to exploration and production companies for their use in finding petroleum underground, generally underwater, but not always. The narrow question before this court is whether the receipts that TGS and Western GECO get from selling that seismic data are receipts from the use of a license or are receipts from other business done in this state. I think the clearest way to see why the controller is wrong is to apply the usual statutory interpretation aids to the language and see what happens if you come up with a ridiculous result. First, the other four intangibles that are specifically listed in the Texas statute, that is patents, copyrights, trademarks, and franchises, may themselves be licensed. That is, they're either kept or not used at all, or they're sold outright, or they are licensed. And so when you add the word license here and then treat it as a mechanism or a method of conveyance, as the controller wants to do, it makes the words patent, copyright, trademark, and franchise surplusage. And that violates Sultan v. Matthew, which says that you should treat like words in a series alike. and it violates your rule against making words of a statute mere surplusage. I mean, you could just have the word license only in here and reach the same result as to any transfer or conveyance of four of those five, or really five of those five,
But what about the license? The argument that the legislature, in fact, intended that result by amending the statute?
The legislature changed the statute in 1997 to make it consistent with a rule the comptroller promulgated back in 1988. Let me go backwards a little bit. Prior to 1959, everything was sourced to the location of payor. Then the legislature amended the statute and said that royalties from patents and copyrights would be sourced to their place of use. In 1988, the comptroller passed a rule, the successor of which is still around, and the history of this is in tab 3 of your bench book, saying that receipts to the owner for the use of trademarks, franchises, and licenses are allocated to the location where they're used. Then in 1995, the legislature had another rule that said receipts from lawsuits, recoveries in lawsuits, should be sourced to the location of use. And there was a challenge to that in the Pennsoil case. And in Travis County District Court, that rule was struck down. The court said, hey, this is not a patent or a copyright. So the legislature, the comptroller, at that point repealed not only that rule, but repealed this rule because it couldn't survive under the rationale. And it's admitted in the Court of Appeals opinion and in the comptroller in her brief on the merits at page 6 that the comptroller's office then went to the legislature and said, enact our language. So the legislature's addition in 1997 of these three new words, trademarks, franchises, and licenses, was to merely make the law consistent with the practice that the comptroller had for nearly a decade.
But the Pennsoil case involved settlement proceeds, and that
it did. But it was another section of the statute, and the license. The rationale of the Pennsoil case made this section, the comptroller thought, that made this part of. Well, at any rate, she repealed the part of her rule.
The language is a little more specific. I mean, she had used settlement agreement there to be swept into another piece of the statute. Here, license has been actually put into the statute.
Neither one of those were in the statute. Neither settlement agreements nor licenses were in the statute itself at the time of the Pennsoil case. Both of them were in comptroller rules. The Pennsoil case involved a different rule than this one. It involved the rule about settlement proceeds. When the Pennsoil case struck that down, the comptroller felt that the reasoning the court used made that holding binding on this rule as well. So both of them were repealed. Then the comptroller went to the legislature, and this part at least was added at the request of the comptroller's office, was added back in. So under our humble case and under typical legislative acceptance doctrine, this court should look at the practice that the administrative agency was using at the time they went to the legislature and said, adopt this rule. And essentially what it did was the legislature adopted the status quo ante, and they made license one of the assets that is an exception to the general rule of sourcing to location of payor, and instead you source it to place of use.
Section 5 of your bench brief, you have the Wisconsin statute there, and I guess, could you talk about that now?
I'd love to talk about Wisconsin. It is a little metaphysical to talk about this word license and its different uses, but the Wisconsin statute at tab 5 of the bench book makes it absolutely clear. It says gross royalties and other gross receipts received for the use or license of intangible property, including, and then it lists certain intangibles, and down about eighth in the list is licenses. So this statute actually uses the term license in both of its different meanings.
By using a license agreement, are you not using a license?
No, because as you look at this term, use from the receipt of intangible receipts from the use of intangible property, It's clear that the use is that of the customer. And the receipts are those that come to the owner of this intangible. And the comptroller's rule makes that clear. It talks about receipts from the owner. That's implied in the statute. So what's being used has to be the intangible asset, which is not a license here. What is being used, the asset that is owned by TGS, is its data.
So
the license is only owned by the customer.
So your argument is there's no use of a license by TGS by the selling of data.
It's not using a license. If TGS had a right to sublicense in its agreement with its customer, and the customer then sublicensed to, say, one of its subsidiaries, it would be using a license because what it owns is not the data. It owns a license that it purchased from TGS. So if it sublicenses, and that's why when you have patents, copyrights, why these words become surplusage, because the only way that those are transferred is through a license. A license can be transferred through a sublicense. And in addition to those that have been mentioned by co-counsel, you have stadium seats can be sublicensed. You may have a license to use a hunting lease that can be sublicensed. So a lot of times you have a license that can be sublicensed.
If a patent is licensed in the generic sense to some other entity, if your client did that, and it also sold the patent or got receipts from use of the patent with other clients, other customers, how would you analyze that under 171.103B or 6?
Well, the sale of a patent is a sale of an intangible asset, so it's sourced to the location of payor. The licensing of the patent is under subsection 4, under receipts from the use of an intangible asset that's specifically listed, which is here the patent. Many states do. They list a number of things, like Wisconsin does, and then they put or any other intangible asset or similar intellectual property. Texas doesn't do that. The general rule is that you source the location of payor, an easy rule, and the legislature has chosen to make limited exceptions to it. What I believe the Court of Appeals did is that instead of interpreting the statute, it rewrote it, whether purposely or inadvertently. On page 645, the court held, "We conclude that the payments by TGS for licensing its customers to use proprietary seismic data are gross receipts from the use of a license." There again, confounding who owned and who used. Then 14 times in their opinion, the court uses the term licensing activities and tries to make that equal to a license. I say that in the context of this statute, licensing is no more equivalent to a license than fishing is equivalent to a fish. And the court has been confounded by the limitations of the English language and has taken the same word, which can have two very different meanings, and has conflated them. By doing so, it's rendered much of this statute surplusage. It's led to the possibility for inconsistent interpretations, because when you license a patent, you don't know which way it's going to be treated. Other intangible properties that are subject to a license that are not in this list have the possibility of being sourced either to location of use or location of payor. You can solve all these problems by looking to Wisconsin, seeing the difference in the use of this same word in two different uses, and interpreting this as the controller herself interpreted it in the language she asked the legislature to adopt back in 1997.
Are there any further questions?
Thank you,
counsel. The court's now prepared to hear an argument from respondent.
The court. Mr. Van Oort will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. TGS issues a license to its customers to use the data. When the customer then uses the data, it is using a license to the same extent that a person using a protected formula or protected process would be using a patent. Thus, it is the location of the customer's use that determines the sourcing of TGS's receipts.
So in licensing data, you would say the customer is both using the data and using the license, or TGS is using the data and using the license both?
Well, the customers is, TGS owns the data. Customers using the data, I think in a very practical sense, both TGS and its customers are using the license.
Both
are using the license. Although it's the use of the customers, I should say the location of the customer's use, that's determinative for the statute. Because again, the purpose of this statute is to affix some type of geographic location to a use, to apportion an intangible receipt.
It's a little bit unclear to me why the location of payor and place of use are so very different. I mean, where the payor is located would seem to me to be where the license is used.
In some cases it would be the same. In the for TGS's customers, most of these customers had their principal place of business in Texas, presumably in Houston, but were had their legal domicile elsewhere in Delaware. And so the location of payor fixes on legal domicile, not the principal place of business.
How is the licensing of seismic data different than the licensing of software?
Well, I think in one key way that presumably had some importance to the comptroller, was certainly recognized by the Third Court, is that the software industry is substantially larger, has more customers, would be harder for the comptroller to keep track of location of use of thousands, if not millions, of copies of computer software. Comptroller made a determination for administrative convenience to source the software receipts to the location of payor.
Does the comptroller believe that the income derived from the licensing of any intangible asset ought to be apportioned based on use?
Essentially, that's correct. The phrase, the term licensing, the last item in the subsection 4 category, that could and does apply to any intangible, any item of intellectual property that is used by another person.
But you'd acknowledge that's a sea change from the comptroller's position, evidenced in the administrative interpretation in 1988.
Well, it is and it isn't. The tax TGS's reliance on the 1990 and 91 letter rulings, we believe, is based on an incomplete reading of those letter rulings. I'm looking at the May 23, 1990 letter ruling.
I'm looking at the rule implementing section 171.103 that said receipts to the owner for use of trademarks, franchises, and licenses are allocated according to the location where used, and the comptroller interpreted that language to be the location of the payor for seismic data licensing.
Prior to the 1997 statute, the comptroller did indeed source those transactions to the location of payor.
Well, it sourced it, but it interpreted that language, that specific language that included licenses. And so the argument's been made that the 1997 amendments by the legislature were simply incorporating her interpretation into the statute, and that shouldn't be changed now. That's my understanding of their argument.
That is correct. That is TGS's argument, but I think that a closer inspection of the letter rulings that they're relying on, the 1990 and 91 letter ruling, indicate that the comptroller at the outset stated that the gross receipts from these activities are from a license to use the geophysical information or the data. So right out of the box, the comptroller categorized and defined these receipts as being receipts from a license to use the data. And again, this is pre-1997 statute, pre-enactment. So she categorized the receipts, but then the next step is where to source them. Prior to 1997, there were fewer choices as to where to source it. It wasn't tangible personal property. It wasn't a lease of real property. The only other option would be to treat it as a sale of an intangible and source it to the location of payroll.
Are you saying between 1988 and 1997, the comptroller just simply changed her mind?
Yes, ma'am. That's the record indicates that sometime after 1988, when the rules were promulgated in 88, and the time she promulgated, or he promulgated the 1990 letter ruling, that the comptroller changed his mind and decided not to enforce the 1988 rule. And TGS is construing that as the comptroller making a decision as saying that their receipts aren't applicable. But a closer inspection of the letter rulings indicate otherwise, that the comptroller was making a distinction. She was categorizing it and defining it, but then not assigning it according to the rule, but in fact was assigning it according to the statute. And
in that circular, because her 1988 interpretation was according to the statute, and so you're saying she completely changed her mind, reinterpreted the statute.
In fact, the comptroller changed her mind based not on what the rule means or should mean, but based on challenges to the constitutionality of that rule. The comptroller made a determination. This was when the Pennzoil case was starting to bubble up. Comptroller made a decision not to multiply the litigation, potential litigation, and just not enforce these provisions.
But the comptroller lost in Pennzoil.
And the comptroller lost in Pennzoil in, I believe, 1995. And then in 1996, she pulled the 1988 rule down, repealed it. And then in 1997, the legislature enacted the statute that we're talking about today. And then, of course, after the 1997 enactment, she repromulgated rules on this.
Your position does not depend on the master licensing agreement's existence, I take it.
Well, and
if it was on an a la carte basis where someone came in and said, we would like to purchase or lease this data, and there's no pre-existing master license, and so then we call this a temporary lease or a terminable lease or something other than a license. We still have the net effect of what we have here. We just don't have the master license agreement. Does that change the comptroller's position?
It would not. The exact form of the master license agreement is not critical. I think what's critical is that there be some license. However, in your example, one of the hypotheticals you put on the table would be something that maybe was more like a sale. If it was not a license, but if it was a absolute conveyance of all the rights to this data, then the comptroller would source it to the location of payer as a sale of an intangible.
Are there any assets that we normally refer to that can be licensed, and any arrangements that we normally refer to as licensing excluded from subsection 4, in your opinion?
Not that I'm aware of. Would like to respond to one of the points that the amicus made with respect to surplus verbiage in the subsection 4 provision. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, that the term license would encompass the licensing of any type of intellectual property or any type of intangible. We think that looking at the statute, looking at the legislative history, the term patent and copyright was already there. The comptroller added these three additional categories, franchise, and a license, and a trademark. The term patent and copyright, they have the functional similarity of all being legal tools to protect intellectual property. They're different in ways, and more significantly, each has a commonly understood meaning. And if those terms were not used in the statute, that would create some confusion. But they were already there, so the comptroller in her proposed legislation and in the bill in the 1997 enactment, when the legislature added the three additional categories to the existing provision, they were indicating that these three additional categories should receive the same treatment as previously applied to patents and copyrights.
I agree with that, that licensing, those terms are all part of the intellectual property analysis. But they all, as you said, they all have distinct meanings and they have distinct purposes. If a corporation that owns a product and has a patent on it is going to sell that asset, then they get rid of the entire asset. But if they want to keep the asset, which in perhaps is a patent or a trademark, then they can license it. And that has a distinctive term. And that seems to fall right in with the argument of your opposing counsel. So I don't understand how you want to group all these words together and say they, in this instance, they mean the same.
Well, for example, the term that hasn't the term in subsection 4 that hasn't been discussed is a franchise agreement.
Mm-hmm.
A franchise agreement is very similar to a license. It's contractual agreement that's issued. It doesn't pre-exist the conveyance or the conveyance. And it's hard to see how a franchise could be licensed. In fact, I would assume that most franchise agreements have a prohibition against sub-licensing the rights that are conveyed in a franchise agreement, which brings me back full circle to the use of the term license and why it, in this provision, why it's similar to a patent and a copyright. TGS makes some point of the fact that, or the argument that a license is not a pre-existing asset, and we think that argument just doesn't take them very far. You know, granted, a patent and a copyright is something that the taxpayer or that a person has. They have it in their drawer, have it in their safe. A license, however, is created at the time the taxpayer, at the time TGS attempts to convey the rights to use the intellectual property.
The argument that's been made is that the licensing here is the vehicle for transfer of an asset. And so if this said, we deed you the data, you would not be treating it as a license. And they're saying this is sort of the same thing. The vehicle for transfer is irrelevant. It's what's being transferred as an asset, not a license.
Agreed that the transfer vehicle or the licensing mechanism concept is not particularly relevant to this analysis. What is relevant is that at the end of the day, TGS's customer has a license, and they're using that license, and they're paying consideration to TGS for that license, and that's a receipt.
Well, and that's where it gets kind of metaphysical, because
yes, ma'am.
I read from one of the amicus briefs where the parties agree that the licensing of an asset is properly regarded as the sale of an asset. And I understand the comptroller agrees with that position. You're just, right? Okay. The licensing of an asset is treated like the sale of an asset.
No, it is not. In terms of how it's sourced, no, the comptroller does not agree with that position. The leasing of an asset may be a type of sale, and for some tax purposes may be included within the general definition of a sale of an asset, but for
if this was a master lease agreement, what would be your position on the sourcing of the receipts?
Would be sourced to the location of use of the data.
If it were sale of an asset.
If TGS made an absolute conveyance of complete ownership rights in the data, then it would be assigned to or sourced to the location of payor, the legal domicile of the purchaser. I see that my time is almost up. I'll go to one final point to address some issues that were brought up about the Humble Oil case. The criteria or the conditions established by the Humble Oil case for the legislature to amend the sourcing statute and to repeal the location of payor rule were met in this case, and we think they were clearly met. A comparison of the Humble facts to the TGS facts, I think will illustrate that. In the Humble case, in 1963, the comptroller seized on some specific sourcing provisions as an implied repeal of the location of payor rule and inferred the adoption of a substitute sourcing provision. In this case, the comptroller's action was not based on any type of inferential reasoning, but instead the comptroller looked to clear and express language that was added to the statute. It wasn't there before, and it expressly addresses franchises, trademarks, and licenses. And that is a substantial and express change to the text of the statute. It indicates the intent of the legislature to abandon the location of payor rule for the three categories that were added in 1997.
Mr. Van Ort, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the bench brief from opposing counsel, but what guidance, if any, do we give this Wisconsin statute?
Well, thank you for mentioning the Wisconsin statute. I think that the Wisconsin statute, if anything, it's easier to read, and I'm thinking that it's easier to read not because it uses the word license twice, but because it uses the word use twice. It speaks to the grantor's use, and then again later on in the statute, it speaks to the licensee, or I should say the licensor's use, and then the licensee's use. And so it makes the statute, the Wisconsin statute, easier to read because it uses the word use twice. However, with respect to the Texas statute, the use of the term, or the inclusion of the word use, applies to the use of the data, which the comptroller has construed as being the customer's use of the license, use of the data. And so the term use that's missing, that's not in the Texas statute, relates to the licensor's use of the license to protect its intellectual property, its ownership interest in that data. And so I think that's what makes the Wisconsin statute easier to read. Believe that if you take the same set of facts and apply the Texas statute and apply the Wisconsin statute, you come up with the same result.
If TGS receives or obtains receipts from the use of a patent, the receipts are sourced to the state where the license is used. Correct.
For a patent.
For a patent.
It's sourced to the location where the process or formula is put into a production line or put into some type of productive use.
So where it's used.
Yes. But
if TGS licenses a patent, your position is it's sourced to the state where the license is used.
Same result as the prior. Well, really the same result either way, but the...
You agree with that statement?
Yes.
Okay, then address the argument that under that interpretation of subsection 4, the term license is superfluous. Why is license in that list of items if you don't need it?
Because the patent and a copyright are commonly recognized forms to protect, vehicles to protect intellectual property, and they are included in this list to specify that it applies to any type of conveyance of the right to use a patent short of an absolute sale. And then we talked about...
I'm not sure I follow you.
Okay.
Can you restate that? Why is the term license in subsection 4 not superfluous?
It's not superfluous in part because a franchise agreement is a self-implementing or self-executing contract agreement. A franchise agreement does not need a separate licensing agreement in order to be effective or to be affected. And the other explanation is that, looking at the legislative history of this, patents and copyrights were already there. If the legislature had been working from a clean slate, they may have drafted it differently. They may have used the format that Wisconsin used. But the legislature had a purpose in adding the additional categories to the existing subsection 4.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. Court's ready to hear argument, hear rebuttal.
May it please this honorable court. About licensing any intangibles. Justice Willett, you asked whether this took this statute and this rule licensing any intangible. If you take the word licensing any intangible, you don't need those other four words because patents are always licensed. You don't need those four words at all. And I guess I could see if they just added the word license to those two words, but they used two other assets, trademarks and franchise, at the same time that they added the word license.
It seems like you have, with a patent, you actually have something separate from the process that's patented. You have a protection that's granted by the government. And then you have the process that you don't even have to get a patent unless you want. I mean, you could keep that process as a trade secret, maybe.
Sure.
So you have separately. And the same thing in a copyright and a trademark. You have the underlying asset or process or whatever, and then you have the protection. How about franchise?
Well, franchise, that's interesting because franchise is, it's an actual asset. So McDonald's, they have a bunch of rights in a franchise. So they have...
Are there any governmental franchises granted where you have something, some protection or something granted apart from the operation itself?
I think there are, Justice, but I'd have to brief that for you. I think there are governmental franchises, but I think this does cover contractual franchise agreements
as
well.
This franchise, as we move away from a protective separation, something that's separate from the underlying asset, into a contractual relationship.
Yes.
We move into the licensing.
Well, we got franchises is an asset of itself. You could sell a franchise. And in our case, we could sell our data, and we do. You asked that question earlier. We have situations where somebody will come to us and say, okay, we just want some data and we want all rights to that data. We do sell that. We go out and we'll do the shoot and then we'll sell it to them, and that's taxed to the location of payor. We just have a master license agreement that we can sell the same data to other people and they just can't give it to anybody else or sell it to anybody else. And all we're asking this court to do is follow clear statutory rules of construction with the surplusage problem, follow the comptroller's own rule in interpreting the statute, and she herself used the word asset in her fiscal note when she was going to the legislature to ask them to implement this rule. And so we're just asking you for this court to follow the comptroller's own rules, follow sound rules of statutory construction, and the computer software problem will go away because it's not... This statute was not designed to tax the licensing of all assets. Tax somebody who owns a license. That's all I have. Do you have any more questions?
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The pause is ended, and the court will take a brief recess.